Blog Talk Radio.
Outside still singing. So,
yeah, the boys outside still singing, folks.
That's a blessing.
So how many of y'all got that, you know, again last night? A lot of virtual parties taking place. I'm starting to see them pretty regularly on Friday and Saturday night. So I know people were taking part in it. There are people that are doing virtual concerts and whatnot. So people are trying, the artists and our creatives are trying to do their best to keep our mind in a happy place. But there's some serious things that we need to be talking about. And that's kind of the topic of the show. You know, because this is probably, for most of us, the most defining time that we ever will deal with. The only group of people that I personally know of that have dealt with things that are greater than death is the greatest generation and their parents who dealt with the Great Depression and then right after that World War II, in which our entire nation is engulfed by a crisis. But the difference between those crises and what we're dealing with today is that we were dealing with something that we could put our hands on. We knew how to turn it around. They were physical beings that we could attack straight up, that we could see with our eyes. These things were tangible in a way that it met the spectrum of what we can see visually. We have an enemy right now that we can only see in microscopes, and we can only tell it's been there after it's wreaked havoc. And so things are not always as they seem, because we are already starting not to pay attention. Even as we're looking this situation in its eyes. And in this episode, there's a couple of things that I wanted to point out. And Kadada's going to help me out, because Kadada's good at keeping me on track so we don't go off into the weeds here. But there's some things I want you to actively follow. And when I mean I want you to track and actively follow, I need you to do a pen and paper, because there are some things that I've watched data-wise that don't make any sense. Like I've watched, you know, me and Kadada was talking this morning, and I've been watching all the numbers, you know, jobless numbers, number of cases that people have tested positive, number of people recovered, you know, number of people dead. Now if you go to the Georgia Department of Health website, they actually got some demographic data on the people who died in Georgia so far, basically telling us if they were male, female, what age they were, and what county they lived in, when they died, and how did they catch it? Now, some of this is information that is good to know, but as Kadada said to me earlier today, tell them what you told me earlier today about, you know, how we follow these numbers.
Which part? The mental health perspective or the fact
the
that some of these numbers... Well, from a mental health perspective, I mean, it is not healthy for us to be number trackers. It causes anxiety. I know people who can't sleep because all they're doing is watching these numbers. And there are some things that we need to accept that will help our mental well-being. And this may be hard to understand and even hard to accept, but we have to accept the inevitable. And some of the inevitables are, the first is that there's going to be death. We know that there's going to be death. The numbers may be a little shocking, and I don't want to seem cold about this, but they actually shouldn't be shocking because people do die every day, and we don't get a running toll every day. I know that there's been some sites, some TV shows that are actually doing like a little running. I can't even think of what, all I could think of is like an odometer where it's just spinning, you know, and we're telling us how many people have died or how many people actually have the virus. Tracking numbers like that is not a good thing because it charges your, it gets your brain working in the way that it doesn't need to be. Like I said, it's causing anxiety. The other fact that we need to understand, and this is where, and Scout, you and I have been talking about this, there is some illogical behavior going on during this pandemic, and hopefully we'll delve into that. But one of the most illogical things is how we are setting our expectations. If we know that a lot of people, especially here in Georgia, have not been tested because we don't have enough test kits, right? 2 weeks ago, we only had about 200 tests in the entire state of Georgia, 200. Mm-hmm. So we should not be shocked nor surprised that the numbers are increasing or that people are dying because guess what? We cannot identify who's sick or, you know, or what symptoms people have. So sometimes in moments of crisis like this, to calm ourselves, we have to go back to what is logical. And if we know there's not enough tests, we can also expect that there's going to be a higher number of deaths or cases. And I also know that the unknown is probably what's really causing a lot of people's anxiety because we aren't getting any type of assured answers from our leadership. Right? It seems very vague. It's very disjointed. You know, the governor has said, you know, obviously we're in the metro area. We know that there is a crisis in the metro area because we have a lot of great leaders talking about, no, we want to protect people. We want to protect you. Let's kind of save ourselves a little bit. So please help us and partner with us to do so. And then you have other places in Georgia where it's just like, oh, well, according to our governor, well, there's 50 places, there's 50 counties that don't have this. So why do I need to shut down the state? Because it's going to harm those people. Well, let's go back to the top. If we know we don't have enough tests to verify whether or not people have it or not, we can assume that there's going to be in those 50 counties that there's going to be people that that have it
exactly.
And will die. And so
that's one of those things that I wanted to talk about is because I had a conversation with an elected official and in one of these small rural counties. And their government is taking this shit for a joke. And they have cases. And they're still taking it for a joke.
Yep.
And the thing is that what we fail to understand it in America, and we're trying to still balance in America between our civil liberties that are supported by the Constitution and public health and public safety. And we have freedom of movement and everybody's really, 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 really scared as they ought to be, curtailing those freedoms because we don't want it to be so easy that people can cut our freedoms off. that they can turn it on and off like a light switch, because sooner or later somebody will turn it off and leave it off. But people don't understand that people are traveling across county borders, because they're going to, we still got people at work. Okay, we still got people at work. And we got people who are traveling to go get food. And a lot of these places, well, these 50 counties where we don't see anything, all of them are rural counties. Now, I'm the former chair of the rural caucus for the Democratic Party, so I don't see rural Georgia. We know that the biggest problem that we have from a public health perspective in rural Georgia is that we don't have enough hospitals. That's going to be one. That's one situation. We also know that we have massive food deserts in rural Georgia. Every community does not have a Kroger, an Ingles, hell, a Piggly Wiggly, a Harvey. You don't have a grocery store in every community, so people have to travel 30, 40 miles and maybe even leaving their county to go to the closest grocery store. So people are not getting tested. People are having to move around just to do essential things. And people are also still going to work. So if there are people leaving from, and if you watch the explosion that took place, I got something in my throat. Got the corona. But because I was just eating a sandwich. But
Before you go any further, Scout, let's pause for a moment, because we should not have to justify why we are coughing in this world anymore.
But we are.
And I know you said somebody
coughs down, everybody goes get silent and looks at you and is like.
Understand that, but what I'm saying is that that's part of the panic and anxiety that's being created in this world. At the beginning of the month, guess what? We were all coughing and sneezing, and we had no fear. And then now we are doing something, because that's the type of stuff that I worry about, because it can isolate somebody. And even
right.
though, you know, it's not only it isolates people, but it can lead to harm to other people.
Yeah, because you got people who ain't got no damn sense.
Yep. I mean, we already had a case here in Georgia where two women who were at the post office, and they were standing. Apparently, the older gentleman thought they were too close to him or whatever he thought, and he pulled a weapon on them because he felt like they had the virus. I mean, that's the type of stuff we do not need as human beings. When we become that irrational, and that irrationality begins because we start with the, oh, my gosh, like I just coughed, or I can't cough, or I can't sneeze, because people are going to think I'm such and such. Well, shit, we are in allergy season. We are in allergy season right now. We're all going to be coughing and sneezing. I'm sorry.
Right.
I just needed to say that because it's been in my spirit.
And I'm glad you said that, because I'm unconsciously feeding into that. But going back to what I was saying, if you look at the explosion that took place in Southwest Georgia, because the hot spot in the state outside the metro is Darby County, which is the city of Auburn, Georgia. And
oh, that's a hot spot.
They've had 17 deaths down there as of this morning. And that's higher than it is in Fulton, and Fulton has 13. I mean, Darby County is number 3 in the state for its number of cases. And if you look at the counties that surround it, Lee County, which is taking a big hit, you look at Sumter that is nearby, all the counties in Southwest Georgia have gotten some type of hit off of it because of that. So quickly, talk about, I got somebody trying to call me right now. Kadada, talk to them really quickly about, you know, how that's an issue.
Well, one of the things that, as you know, I guess some of the benefits of knowing people to know people is that we actually aren't getting the real numbers. And I hate to be a conspiracy theorist over here, but if you ever talk to nurses or doctors or anybody that work in the medical profession, I mean, I'm not going to name the county, but we have doctors and nurses that are like, wait a minute, they're not reporting the true numbers.
And this is scary for us because I can't relate to say how other states are handling it, even though I do want to give a shout out to to Cuomo over there in New York, my favorite home state. But when we cannot really get the true numbers of what's going on, it makes us feel helpless even more, and it makes us we can't trust government. And we can't allow the balance between lying to the public for safeguard, because I promise you the answer to that question is, why is it that we're not hearing the true numbers? It's because we want to keep people safe, right? We don't want people to panic. That's going to be the real answer. However, when you do that, you leave the government not to be trusted. And we need to trust our government at this time. We need to trust somebody in leadership that's going to tell us the truth, that's going to advise us and tell us what our next steps are, and then reassure us that what is going on, it is going to end. But we are in this together, and we know we're not receiving that from our top leadership. We know.
Right.
And that's very problematic. And so we have not only we can see Albany, right? We know what's happening in Albany, but we are so fractured across the state. Even the metro is fractured. You know, we've got some places with curfews. We've got some place with shelter-in-place orders. And I don't know if you there was actually an article that came out of New York. A lawyer actually said, you cannot, in his own opinion, in his legal opinion, he's like, you cannot mandate someone to stay in their house. And a lot of our shelter-in-place orders have no teeth, as we'd say it, right? Like, what are the consequences for me going out in public? What are the consequences? Like, yesterday, we had 3 farmers markets in Georgia, in metro Atlanta. 3! And the lines were deep. People were in Piedmont Park. People were all over the Beltline walking. It looked like a regular day. So what does this shelter-in-place really look like for us if there's no consequences?
That's one of the things that I want to talk about, because, you know, a lot of the reasons why the restrictions have not been so tight is because people are worried about the economy. You know, the fact that we still got, you know, people working in so-called essential businesses. We are still able to get food from most of our favorite restaurants, and we're able to get curbside, which is very interesting that we had so many restaurants closed down that we got able to get curbside. Some of these restaurants could have stayed open and just made to-go plates. And kept some
but it's still not bringing
place.
In enough. It's not. It's but here's the problem with that though. It's not. They're not bringing in the same amount of revenue during curbside, right? Because restaurants are making their money about how many tables are filled. So if you have a 50 table restaurant and you only receive 15 orders, well, guess what? You don't need a full staff.
Right. I'm not saying keep your whole staff, but there's some restaurants that are completely just totally. In the beginning, just shut down. They just shut down.
Yeah.
They shut down. And, you know, now a lot of folks have waited it out a little bit longer and found, we can do curbside. Because I know, like in LaGrange, I'm gonna use my home of LaGrange. A lot of the nicer restaurants that are in our downtown area have continued to do curbside. And business is going for some of those. And some of the restaurants closed earlier. And they're not getting any business at all. And, you know, and you got people saying, why we couldn't have, that worked there, particularly some of the management, like, we could have did curbside. You know, people were loyal enough. You know, but that's another thing, you know. We got people.
But here, hold on. I want to say something. Wait a minute. I want to say something about this restaurant thing, right? Because there's a restaurant here in Atlanta, and I'm trying to find the name of it. And I know it's a pizza restaurant, and they ended up closing, not because they couldn't handle the amount of business, but they closed because people had no respect for
the rules around being quarantined, right? So what I mean by that is,
right.
you know, they had people walking in and not, you know, respecting the 6-foot rule, right? They actually
right.
said to people, you know, we need you to only pay us with credit card, right? Because guess what? On a credit card, you can clean it off, you can sanitize that, because we haven't figured out yet if handing over cash is a problem. And they tell the story of a woman that came in and wanted to pay. I think it was a woman that came in and wanted to pay with money and, you know, cash, dollar bills kind of thing. And they said, no, we're not accepting that. And this woman got upset and coughed on the money. And essentially kind of like threw it down. Now here's a business owner that's trying to not only protect their business but also still serve the public, right?
Right.
And you have people disrespecting. So they closed down because grown adult people could not
follow the rules. Now that is one of the things. Now that's one of the things that I will say in this, you know, because the title of the show, we got winners, losers, and why we shouldn't give a fuck. Okay. But this is one of the losers. Is it because one of the things that we're finding out, and we've always known this about us Americans, is that we're not really big into following rules. Okay? Because
yeah.
The way our culture is set up is that we believe from the foundation of the revolution that we're supposed to fight the power. Okay? That's just us. That's the continuation of the American Revolution, is that we fight rules. Not understanding that when that was 200-something odd years ago and people still were living an agrarian lifestyle and we weren't that much of an urban nation yet. And when you live in an urban nation and people start living in groups of more than a couple of hundred, you got to have some rules. Because if you don't, and people start doing stupid shit. Now, I had a conversation with some activists who wanted to do a protest and said, you know, if they don't give us, then we threaten to cough on them. And I was like, I would freaking shoot
you. Wait,
what?
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Who? I'm sorry. I feel like,
I'm not going to say who it was. Because
no, I think they need to be outed
was,
because this is some foolishness right here.
But
and you know, I'm
like
all
this.
About having a level of decorum, but this is ridiculous.
Look, but it's like this. That person who said that dumb shit got shut down so fucking quickly that I don't need to say that night. They're not going to be shit. Because they had people that they thought was on their side, like, really? That's what we're going to do? Because they went to a whole other level of what we would normally do in a protest to take an understanding. Look, one,
so
we're going to
harm others
shit.
Just so we can get a game. See, you know what?
No, we're not going to do that. I said at that point, you crossed the line from a protest to acts of terrorism.
Right.
Because you're using something that could be particularly dangerous to try to get a political goal attained. That is the textbook.
Terrorism.
Not gonna do it. Not gonna do it. Don't want to hear about it. So that the people
is this person on my page?
They may or may not.
You wanna tell me who it is? So you wanna tell me offline so I can block their dumb asses?
Yeah. And I may or may not be in because you know I don't know. But this thing is, this is a loser in this whole thing because people are not taking it seriously enough to understand that if you were to do that, folks are going to lose their shit. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You just like we just talked about if I call and then we have to justify our call and you did that shit as a form of protest or do like this woman did. You got mad, so you coughed on the money. You threatened me. I guess it's just as bad as me taking you. I tell you, you tell me, well, I can't allow you to do that, and I pull a gun on you. regardless if the gun is loaded or not, regardless of whether I pull a gun on you. That's like, you know, as an African American man, somebody threatening to call the police on me, I take that shit as an act of violence. If you get mad at me, someone call the police on you, and you're having an argument, or we're just having a disagreement, and you say you're going to call the police on me, you just tried to kill me. That's exactly how I look at that. So you got people who are doing that type of stuff or even letting it go through their head. And see, this goes down to why I wanted to talk about this particular, I wanted to have this conversation on the show, is because even from an economic standpoint, we're gaslighting each other about how things are supposed to go. Because I'm going to go back to something that I was talking about, essential business. There are certain governmental entities that are putting out lists of what an essential business is. Here in Rockdale County, they actually set out a list of the companies who are allowed to be open and the ones that are allowed to be closed. And I'm looking at this list and I'm going, what makes that essential? What makes that essential? What makes that essential?
Why a little store is essential?
Right. Why is, you know, why is so many of these businesses essential? Like, hell, shit really not closed.
Yep.
We're going through the motions. We're going through the motions of saying we on lockdown.
Yeah.
But people, only thing that's happening is that the folks who work in Atlanta are not on the road going into the city every day.
Yep.
That's the beauty part of it. Most of the folks that work in the city of Atlanta or work in the municipal, you know, in the municipalities in close are not coming in. So you got all these people out here. Hold on, I forgot, but we got a caller. Let me take this call.
Okay.
Good morning, Carl. I'm sorry.
Hey, what's going on? How y'all doing?
We doing fine.
Well, good morning.
That's good. That's good. The coronavirus, huh? You guys are speaking about the coronavirus.
Yeah, we're talking about the
Before we go
Okay.
Who are you, caller?
My name is Equanee. I'm calling from South Carolina.
Okay. What's going on in South Carolina?
Man, we just went on a lockdown yesterday, you know. And I this was brought to my attention today while you guys were discussing this issue. And it has been an atmosphere where there are the conspiracy theorists that are saying, hey, this is this type of virus. It isn't really that serious. It isn't, you know, easily to be transferred and things, but nor am I trying to find out if it is or it isn't. You understand? So I do understand that it should have always been important for people to be careful in how they are washing and sanitizing themselves.
Yes.
You understand? Maybe
you
this situation
about
is,
that.
You know, because in these times in which I'm in, I never saw, and I'm not talking down on anybody, but us as black folks to have now so many alternative lifestyles where now we are sleeping with animals and we got a llama that's laying in the bed with us and we have our dogs and things of that nature. And to me, how I grew up.
Wait, what?
These things were
foreign.
Y'all
got wild shit going on in South Carolina.
No, that's not. I never heard anything like that going on in South Carolina.
I'm sorry.
I was not ready. We must just be honest with ourselves. I saw a picture. I never saw or witnessed anything like this personally, but via social media, this is how I have access to this. So it's not anything that I've seen in South Carolina. So it's, you know, me being privy to social media. But whether it's black girl, right, back in the day it was things that white folk would do, but this black girl allowed a dog to come and lap out of her cereal bowl, right? You know what lapping is when a dog licks down in that pail and the drool and everything goes everywhere. And so this thing was strange because I know rather than staying close to washing your hands, properly sanitizing yourself, making sure that you're clean, we're okay with doing things like this. We're okay with hitting a blunt, passing around to 10 people. You don't know what they've been doing with their mouths.
Mm.
You understand?
Mm.
So this is an actuality, and it shouldn't have taken coronavirus for us to be in this place of consciousness. So I will say it is a good thing that I'm seeing people being more clean, being more conscious, and definitely taking better precautions on protecting yourself, better diets, right? So many people now are talking about the importance of immunity. So now you may have people that are normally accustomed to eating fast food. Now they can't go because the fast food is shut down, right? Or like the case last night where I saw people in Chipotle, and Chipotle is basically an open serve, right? But they are going to have you behind the counter, but their workers don't have any masks on. That right there puts me in a situation where I don't want anymore. I'm sorry, but the coronavirus is going around. Of course, I'm supposed to be skeptical of myself and other people, but you as well, worker, have you guys been tested? You know? And I think these types of questions should be raised when we're going forward, you know, handling this situation and protecting ourselves.
Well, we
appreciate you bring up some fabulous points because, you know, one of the things that I have a good friend because I have an autoimmune disease, and so she has been pushing for me to, you know, strengthen my immune system, and it's really amazing. And even there was an article that came out on CNN that said, you know, how we eat could help flatten the curve of the virus because we are so used to fast food. And I mean, and I can say I'm one of those people too. Fast food, going out to restaurants, and you know, as much as we love to go out to restaurants, a lot of the restaurants we eat at, it's not healthy food, right? It's heavily laden with butter, and all of those things aren't good for our immune systems. And so you are right. Right now, food, even if it's essential for us to live, it's also essential for our immune systems. And just let everyone know, citrus, stock up on oranges. I don't need y'all to go out and buy 5,000 oranges because we need everybody else to have some oranges like me. But citrus is really good for your immune system. Apples, things like beets. You know I just started getting back into beets. You know, I had horror stories of beets from when I was a little girl. But those are the kind of things that nutrient-rich foods that we need to be putting into our systems right now. I know when I first was able to get to the grocery store, because I got there a little later than everybody else in the panic, being under the legislature, I was looking at people's grocery carts, and here I am in the fresh food section, you know, getting all my vegetables, because in my mind, my girlfriend's in the back of my head talking about you need to build your immune system, and I'm watching people stacked with Oreos and chips, and I'm like, what is that going to do for you?
Right. And I'm at a place where those are the actual inciters. Those are the things that actually help the virus or help any virus progress because those things aren't food at all. So when you're putting, as I was just thinking while you were talking, if I lost my whole family, I'm going to be upset, right? And if somebody is overly upset, they're going to be crying. They're going to have snot coming in from everywhere.
Yeah.
You're going to be expelling, right? It's the same thing when you put certain things that aren't healthy for your body. You're getting your body upset, and that's what you're going to do.
Right.
Start to create a mucus-filled environment. So now you're going to have mucus coming from everywhere, you understand, because this is a means of your body fighting back. So now this is what gives that virus something to cling on to is that mucus because you aren't eating food, especially fast food. I know they did the McDonald's experiment where they put this meal, a number 3, Big Mac and fries, outside or in a container for 2 years.
Y'all not
going to
talk about,
and it's
my,
not,
y'all not gonna talk about
and
my
it,
favorite sandwich.
And it looks the same. So it is important that we are eating substantial nutrition in these times. Eating substantial nutrition.
Right. And this is one of the things where I was talking about when we were talking about how, what's essential and what's not essential. Now, we're talking about grocery stores and this, that, and the other being open. And I want to thank that caller for calling in.
Thank you.
We got grocery stores open. We got, you know, places for people to get food. But at the same time, like you said, you have to, you know, I've been eating better because I'm not eating out as much as I was, and I went and bought food, and I'm cooking and this, that, and other. And people don't realize preparing your own food from fresh ingredients is actually healthier than eating a lot of the processed stuff. I mean, I've probably eaten better in the last 2 weeks than I have in, like, the last 2 years because I've went and bought groceries that I could cook.
Right.
And, you know, and then I start taking, you know, I've been buying fruit. And I've been taking immune boosters, you know, Power C, and been taking zinc and all these other things. But we know we appreciate that call. We need more people to call in. Tell us what's going on out there. The number is 563-999-53560. 563-999-3560. I got one of my friends on Facebook that said that he had tried to call and the lines was busy. I don't know about that, because it ain't like I got a bunch of people queued up. So I don't know if it's, you know, other people trying to call in through the Blog Talk system to other shows. We got our own number, so it shouldn't be busy. Because we can take up to like.
Don't call the number online, though. I don't think. Yeah, I think the number that might be on the Facebook page, I think it might be wrong because it's another area code. But call us, people, because we are concerned. And can we just pause for 1 second? Because my heart is a little heavy right now because a sister girl on my page, and Scout, you know her too, she just found out that one of her family members died from the virus. And so I know at this time we are all at some point in time going to know somebody that we're either going to lose someone that we love, we're going to have friends of friends that, you know, that are going to lose loved ones. And so let's just keep everybody in prayers and just be supportive as much as we can, because these are sudden deaths that people aren't, not that we're ever prepared for death, but I think in the midst of this, this is going to be a special type of hurt that people aren't going to be able to let go of and heal from for a very long time. So I just want us to be mindful of that, because the other side of it, and this is something that we can talk about too, because, you know, the funeral industry is being impacted by this, because funeral and weddings, right? There's always two things in life. We know we're going to have weddings and we know we're going to have funerals. People aren't getting married anymore, or some people have change the way that they're getting married, because they can't have like 100, 150 people show up. They can only have 5 to 10 people show up. And then things like funerals, well, guess what? There can only be 5 to 10 people that can attend a funeral, which is very hurtful for, you know, family members, because we want to go and honor our dead. I mean, even, you know, Reverend Joseph Lowry passed away, and they know, you know, there's certain things that, especially if you live in Atlanta, you know, certain people's deaths become our, you know, they're like our family members. And we have an expectation that we're going to go to the funeral, whether it's going to be like we're going to stand in line and view the body or whatever that is. And now we can't even do that. You know, so everybody is going to have to manage this. But everyone's also going to have to be extremely flexible. And if you're not a flexible person, this is going to stretch you, because you are not in control anymore. And this is one of the things that is going to start pushing people. Really pushing people. Change is hard. And when you're not in control, it's even harder.
And so that's one, and a lot of that goes down to the frustration that people have. I'm a blue collar worker, and I work in an essential business. And a lot of us, and you can still, you know, we're talking about it to each other. Don't know if management is keen on the idea, keen on it yet. But there are a lot of us and we are mentally drained.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people are saying, well, your routine really hasn't changed. You're still getting up, going to work every day. It's the fact that I'm leaving my house where I see myself as being safe to go out and interact with other people who I don't know what they like. Are they taking the social distancing seriously? You know, are we dealing with, you know, truck drivers and stuff who's driving and going to different places and coming in? And, you know, I have to, you know, you're seeing some truck drivers that are like, you know, what's your name? And they're writing and they're leaving the paperwork somewhere where you go pick it up. But still, the fact is you handled it, I'm handling it. And people having a whole lot of different, you know, interactions and feelings about stuff. And, you know, I listen to people talking about, particularly in political circles, you know, we stay in this constant battle of capitalism versus socialism. And I'm going to tell y'all who gets screwed in both scenarios. Yeah. And everybody, and nobody wants to admit this. It's the worker. Because I seen somebody today, how do we beat the virus? We seize the instruments of production. Well, damn it, who's still doing the producing? You season it,
right.
But who's doing the producing? The worker. Who is the proletariat? The worker. So if in a capitalistic society, they expect the workers to keep the economy going. In a socialist economy, who do they expect to keep the economy going? The workers. You still got your administrative and your clerical class who can do their work from somewhere else, but the worker is still going to have to go out there. You know, whether it was
and we're so
union
and
or
we
d-
yeah,
you
and
know,
we don't realize that we're playing into it.
Right, and we you nobody still pays attention. Are the socialists saying that this has to pay to the workers? No, you do it for the good of the state. Is the capitalist saying give you has to pay? No, do it for the good of the company.
But let me point
because
out, and you and I have
everybody. It's an academic exercise for everybody till you actually have to do the work.
Well, here's where we're all playing into it, because I'm sure there's somebody out there in the space going, I'm not doing that. I'm not playing into this. Well, let me give a perfect example. So on the Wonderful World of Facebook, because, you know, everyone's sharing everything at the moment, you know, this woman posted about how she could not order, she could not get a time nor a delivery date from Kroger, you know, because they have like the Instacart and, you know, they deliver your groceries or they pick up your groceries for you, right? And she was complaining about how, you know, if the system's crashing or it's taking too many days. And I stumble with this because I get someone's, no, let me say it this way. When we talk about essential food, right? This is what they need to come out with, a list of what's essential food-wise. You know, she may have been ordering something that she deemed essential, right? But so are hundreds of other people. And So everyone's doing something that's essential, right? I need, like, it could be, oh, I just need some shredded cheese because I want to make lasagna today, so it's essential, right? And so those same people are complaining about how they don't have access to something. And then on the flip side of it, those same people are arguing about how we need to be sheltered in, yet not recognizing that you have staff in these stores that are overwhelmed, right? There's people that need to do this work. And so places like Kroger, Publix, Trader Joe's, all these, they're all hiring. Why? Because there's still a need. And those people that they hire, for some odd reason, I don't know if our mind is putting a blind spot to these individuals that are going to work and getting hired, you know, like you, who's going to your job every day. I don't know if we have a blind spot to think, oh, they're superheroes, or because they're providing a service to me that they can't get the virus. I mean, exactly. These are people that are still at risk. They are still at risk for to provide a service. So how do we complain about the need to have everyone shelter in place? Because I say it all over my Facebook page. But then we get upset when they get upset when they can't have what they want in the immediate moment of what they feel is necessary for themselves. And I'm like, we need to figure out how to be a collective society.
Now, I'm going to tell you now that I got some of these same people that just like you, that if I go back and I search through some of the some of the weird conversations, not weird conversations, but some of the nuanced conversations we have about certain things, such as AI and automation and this, that, and the third, right? Now, some of these same people are against AI and automation that will allow their groceries to be shipped by drone or picked by robot. Or whatever, but you want us locked down, but then you also complaining that people are not working hard enough. That is some privileged bullshit.
Shit.
And some of you are just, it's privileged bullshit.
They're privileged.
And it ain't white privilege, it ain't black privilege. This is classism. And and you don't even see it. And some of y'all are capitalists, some of you are socialists, some of you don't even know what the hell you are. All you know is you're selfish, and you want what you want to be.
Yep.
And you're not even thinking about it. If somebody has to go do it, you are disconnected. It's just like people don't understand that why the price of food is going up. Well, one, you got a decreased amount of people to transport. Okay. Then, you have a shortage of people to process it in some places. So, therefore, the prices, are having to produce so much of it that you're having to work overtime to do it, which is increased labor costs. That it has to be passed.
And you can't
on.
Have people and working 12-hour days and think that they're going to be healthy.
And then you got some people who are just fucking greedy and they gouging and they doing price gouging.
Yep.
So then we got people who want to sit there and talk about, y'all like this socialism now. But not realizing there's still a cost that's going to come to that. We're going to pay this. Y'all don't realize we're going to pay this piper down the road. We need it. But I want you to understand that none of this shit is free that we're getting. We're going to pay for it down the road.
Yep.
It is going to come. It might not be this year. It may be next year. But the taxes, there will be a tax increase somewhere.
Yep, most definitely.
There will be a price increase somewhere. So the thing is, to keep our economy floating in this way, where we're trying to balance out stopping and starting it, well, if we were to just get in the beginning, if we were to just say we're going to bite this bullet, we're going to suffer some, and then we had that 14-day bite, we'd have been on the other side of this probably by now. Because that's what the Koreans and the Japanese did. They took a hard bite. We could have took the test kits that were offered to us in the beginning instead of trying to make our damn own. And I promise you, that was about making some damn money.
Yep.
Now, we might not be paying for the test kits, but I promise you the government is paying for the test kits. Somebody was like, we can get this government contract to my buddy over here to make these test kits. And we could have got them and been ahead of the curve and being able, when we had one or two people in the country who had it, being able to test where we knew they were coming in at. And we could have stopped it then. When we had everybody running their asses home from overseas, we could have told people to shelter in place in the countries you're in. Do not come back to the United States at this point. Or we had done a controlled repatriation.
That comes down to our leadership.
But
it's all leadership.
That comes down to that people are so scared to lose short-term money, not thinking about you're going to lose long-term money. And in regards to whatever fucking economic system we have, it is going to pay. The pipe is going to pay. when we need to understand this. And what we, you know, you people probably say, well, why shouldn't we give a fuck about the economy at this particular point in time? Because it's going to suck irregardless. We can either bite the bullet now, we can bite it later. But the question has been, are we willing, how much is an American life worth, in America? Because worst case estimate, that will, at the end of this, there will be 2 million of us dead. That is the worst case estimate. Looking at the way it's rolling right now. If this thing does not do what they, because, you know, you got some people say, oh, summer's coming. And their biases don't like, you know, warm weather and humidity and heat and whatnot. Okay, that could be a possibility. It follows the flu, it might do the same thing. If we get that, ooh, thank you, Lord. The Lord saved us. But what if it doesn't?
Right, right.
These are questions we need to be asking. We're trying to save an economy that may not be saved the way we're trying to save. Now, I'm not trying to worry anybody, but I need for everybody to start thinking. Because we don't want to suffer no more than we have to, we're not willing to sacrifice. This is why when we talk about our generational cohort, we call the generation that went through World War II the greatest generation. Those people sacrificed. They sacrificed. There was a whole time period where you couldn't buy a new car. Hell, the car dealerships were still damn open.
Yep.
I know two people who bought a brand new car within the last week.
Wait, okay, dealerships are still open?
Yes, dealerships are still open. Rode by two or three of them yesterday.
Oh, wow.
They are essential because the repair facilities got to stay open. And this is the thing. You keep a whole business open because one part of that business is essential. Because I understand you don't want nobody's car breaking down and they can't get it fixed. Yeah, this is good. But if we was all not riding around any goddamn way, excuse my language.
Hey, watch your language.
But if we weren't riding around any damn way, take the GD out of it, any damn way, if we wouldn't ride around, we wouldn't have to worry about our cars breaking down. We just go ahead and take this bike. But because that's open, they less of it open, they sell a car. During World War II, you couldn't buy a brand new car. You couldn't even get a car built because they were building tanks. They were building airplanes. They were building stuff for the war effort. You know, and we got essential businesses, and essential businesses are basically to keep certain classes of people comfortable through this so that they don't get mad and rise up and act the fool. I'm sorry, we probably have to worry about that if everybody went around, particularly places like Georgia. I will promise you that Kip is worried about all these open carry jokers around there. I promise you some of that is going to play out in their heads. I promise you their heads.
Of course.
You got people running around
here. We are. But let me say this. I will give people credit. I will give towns credit for in making the rules, I think changing the rules of engagement to keep people safe. There's an article in the AJC today about how one of our mountain towns up in Georgia are going, no, Atlantans, you cannot come here. Because
right.
Atlantans are trying to flock and flee from Atlanta and go up to these mountain communities to stay in cabins. And they're turning people away. I champion those people because I'm like, protect your areas.
It's just like
protect
you got
it and
the,
don't
the
spread
governor,
don't spread stuff.
It's just like you got the governor of Rhode Island in Connecticut and said, hey,
yep.
New Yorker, don't y'all leave. We stopping you. You
don't
got the governor of Florida. They're stopping them. Because this is the thing. You got rich people who said, look, I'll just leave and wait it out somewhere. I mean,
speaking of that,
speaking of that,
hold on, I got a story for you. Because CNN, it has a little buried story, right? And it's called, basically, what are the wealthy doing during this time?
Right.
And I was like, wait, that's an interesting kind of thing. Do you know that in some countries that wealthy people are buying out small towns or buying out hotels and moving their families into those areas? It's happening in certain places in the United States as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like,
you got
this. And I'm like, who would have thought that? Who would have thought
you
that I could go out and buy a hotel?
You got a lot of people who over the last couple of years built those luxury bunkers, bought property up in the mountains in different places, off in the wilderness. Alaska's one of those places that Alaskans are like the spray.
But I mean,
because
Scout, to have the level of, to have the amount of money to go buy out an entire small town, to be like, this is where I'm going to take my family so that way we are going to be safe, is, I don't want to use the word outrageous. I don't want to use crazy. It's just unfathomable to us normal people.
Rich people have always reached. You remember last week when I was talking, and we got 5 minutes before Sharon J. Hill decides when she comes on. But you remember last week when I was talking about the plague of Antonius and the Justinian plague?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go talk about during the Black Death, okay, of the Middle Ages, the bubonic plague. You actually had historical knowledge of kings, queens, and noblemen trying to run from the plague, trying to go hold up in different castles and keep. The Pope actually left Rome and moved to Avignon, France. The papacy left the Vatican and went to France.
Right.
And this was a remote part of France at the time, and they figured, oh, we'd be safe. Hell, it still ended up in Avignon. You know, rich people think that their money can save them, okay? And then you got people who believe collectivism can save them. And I'm going to tell you what, in certain situations, nothing can save you. But, you know, I'm gonna take this from a Christian perspective, okay? And everybody may not feel this way, you may not hold this doctrine, but my mother tells me, she tells me this all the time, the only thing that can save you is Jesus. So you're best to have a good relationship. Whatever it is, you know, and so if you're a non-believer, what I'm basically telling you is that sometimes the only thing that's going to save you is knowing that you do the right thing at the right time. That instead of being an asshole, you was a person of good character and good moral judgment. Because sometimes, even in our adversity, when we do a good thing, it may look like that we're losing in the beginning, but in the end, we win. And sometimes we got to do that. And we are so selfish in this country because we have such a level of luxury that no one else on the planet has that we take it for granted. We have first world problems. And there was I was reading a story just before me and you had our conversation this morning about there was a study done just last year about if something was like this was to happen, which countries would fare best and have the least impact. And they throwing that report out the window because it was saying that we should have been the one country that shouldn't have had the problem. But then it comes down, political scientists say, it comes down to our leadership.
Right.
It comes down to how we lead. And we are so scared in America. We see it time after time. We see it on small things. And I've said it time and time again. Every time we say the word snow in Atlanta, we got this calculation of we're going to overreact and underreact. And since 2014, the government's reaction has been to overreact because they don't want why people can still remember sitting on rolls for 12 hours because we underreacted. They don't want that to happen again. But I promise you, in 5 or 10 years, when that memory starts to go away, because America, we have very short memory. And this is one of the things that study did say that made America vulnerable, is because we have a very short cultural memory cycle. We have always dependent on the fact that we could ramp up a response very rapidly, fight something, and then when it was over with, we could shrink back be how we fought war. America always kept a very small peacetime force. Something started, and we ramped it up really quickly, fought it. But what we learned after World War II is that we prolonged the length of those wars because it always took us like a year or two to build up to be able to fight back. So we kept people on, we built a large peacetime military that now, if you fool with us, we can take you out in 90 days. We need to do the same thing with public health. Now, people sitting there saying, I hear people talking about this is the case for Medicare for All. It is. This is the reason why. But at the same time, if we're going to have Medicaid for All, we also need to have a plan with it that builds up our public health infrastructure to support it. Because right now, if we had Medicaid for All and everybody knew, the system still can't support everybody in this country having free health care, period. You can't even support people having paid for health care from insurance companies. We can't afford it. We don't have the infrastructure for it.
Well, I would say that this has revealed to us where all of our shortcomings are in the United States and possibly all around the world, but specifically here in the United States. And as we bring this home into Georgia, as we address one of the challenges that we have in Georgia is our elections, right? Our election season is upon us. This past week on the 24th, me and all other Georgians, we were supposed to go ahead and vote for are in the presidential primary. We didn't get to do that. I actually felt some kind of way about that. And, you and I, Scout, we both work as politicos in this world and getting people
right.
Elected into office. And then now we have the question on the table about what is going on in regards to our May 19th primary. And one of the decisions that has been made, and I will give Raffensperger, not that I would give it often, a little credit for them making the decision with the help of the Democratic Party of Georgia, that we need to go to absentee ballots. Like
right.
Everyone should be able to have an absentee ballot. So where are we at? And Sharon here.
She's here, and I'm going to bring her on right now.
Okay, so we're going
to
have Sharon.
Welcome yes. back. You've been a long time since you've been on Down South and Dirty. So,
Sharon, it has been a long time, but hey, there's no time like the present, right? And I thank you all. You all are fleshing out some real stuff, okay? you're really getting down and dirty with fleshing out what are in the annals of all that is going on. And I thank you all for that, because we really do need to have this conscious conversation. I have to, you all, first give homage to our now ancestor, the Reverend Dr. Joseph Eccles Vary, who passed on Friday, 98 years old, and having sat at his feet, stood by his side, marched in step, and just continuing, this is a time that, as you began to talk about the political climate that we have now, what we're in, we must lift up and honor his legacy, and no matter what, vote. This is the time. I like to always use my hashtag, vote like it's 1965, because when the Voting Rights Act was signed, and we have to understand, people were, it gets misconstrued because you don't think that people were voting before then, but they were. Women were voting, black women were voting after the 19th Amendment, and let us be clear, here in Georgia, the 19th Amendment was not even ratified until 1970, okay, because it's what? Georgia.
Georgia, you better speak it, girl.
So let us be clear that we have to do what hasn't been done, but at the same time, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have to get back to the basics. And that is, hey, each one reaching one, as we maintain our social distance, this can be done because we have mailboxes. We have mail slots. Okay? We have, you know, mail bins. So I like how you say, you know, about this, you know, what are you going to do? Well, first of all, let's not just get distracted because we only have a short time frame. It was, you do understand that the legislators, well, the majority leader, right, I mean, speaker, was asking for a longer term, and that has not been granted to actually extend the date out to June for the election. But right now, we are set for May 19th, and I posted that on your page. I'm sorry.
We need to be very clear to our listeners that Raffensperger, he made the decision to go ahead and have absentee ballots sent out. Ralston requested that we move this out the primary until June 23rd. Now we do have some federal mandates that say that there's only like 60 days or 45 days that an election can be moved. Now, however, it is the body of the state legislature that can actually change the date, and the legislature is not coming back into session. They will have a special session on April 13th. So it's still possible because it is the body of the legislature that gets to vote on whether or not they need to change that May 19th primary. So it hasn't been officially decided yet.
Right. But what I'm getting to is right now we need to act as of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And as information comes in, that's what we need to make sure goes out. But when I say not the distractions, it's what I mean. It is about us being all boots on the ground, hands on deck. We need to move in what is for the now, because what we have are people waiting. Well, let's see what's going to happen. Let's see what they're going to say. Let us be clear. In Georgia, we only have 21 days for early voting. Let us be real clear. And that doesn't even start until, if the May 19th stands, April 27th. And furthermore, right now, because we need to register, get people registered to vote, for people, teenagers who just turned 18 this month, that they need to register. People who have moved to the state, they need to register. If you moved across the blasted street, you need to re-register. Marry, change your name. Change your name because you want to. You need to register because I have samples of how I enter my name. My name is hyphenated, my last name. So I do not show up as Sharon Hill, as Sharon Jackson, okay, or even Sharon Jackson Hill. And this is something that Helen Butler, who is on a board of elections in Morgan County, you know, Sharon, I don't understand this because it's supposed to show up because of my birth date, right? So get this. The only way that my information shows up is that I hyphenate Jackson Hill. Understand that. So this is why when I say all boots on the ground and hands on deck, we have got to be in our corner, making sure that people understand, our neighbors, that they understand, family, friends, near and far in other states, because this is what is being about to be moved nationally about voting by mail. And so to that end, tomorrow, let us understand my voter page is where your information is for Georgians, because each state is different. And in Georgia, you do not need an ID nor a reason to vote absentee. Yes, it actually still has on there about age 65 and about military, but that's how you want to receive the absentee ballot. Seniors have an option to not submit another absentee ballot application for the next election. They
when they check the boxes, that means that they will receive one concurrently. And they don't have to worry about getting it in. It will automatically be sent out to them. And so for everyone else, though, it's just a basic application. Go to My Voter page. Yes, Google it. Please save it. Download the app for it so that you can share and make sure everyone else is registered. Classic example. So my pastor decided to go ahead with the blood drive here at Zion Baptist Church in Marietta yesterday. The Red Cross, of course, is low on blood, and that's what the call was. So we did. And I had already scheduled for our social justice ministry with our partners, the Sigmas and the Deltas and our Heritage Museum fellows. But because of what is, you know, is going on, we just decided, well, look, I'll just set up a table, you know, and leave the materials here. Well, I was checking back and forth, and it turned out people who were filling out their absentee ballots, the main thing that you need to do is check your voter status. The lady said, wait a minute, I'm not found. Okay, well, you need to now complete a voter registration form.
Right.
Another thing, is somebody's her address. Oh, no, this has another address. You need to now do a voter registration form. So it's so vitally important that, yes, things are changing every day. But let us be clear. We must stand the course. We must make sure that all eligible residents are registered. That's what we must do. And then with the opportunity to submit absentee ballot applications to receive your ballot at home, please, My Voter page. So important for us, as I say, get back to the basics. We can do that within, when I mention your corner, I'm talking about your community. We can use this phone for getting this done. Reach out to your people. Do you have a voter registration form? Do you have your status? Help them with their status. It's only your first initial, last name, your county, and your birth date. That's all. It's no other personal information, just that, and whether, and if it populates, we're good. Absentee ballot application. If it doesn't, voter registration and absentee ballot application. It can be found at My Voter page. For registration, you have to print it out. Please print it out and mail it in. All you have to do is fold it and mail it in. It's already postage paid. I picked up the absentee ballot applications here in Cobb County, and they actually have a postage paid envelope to send it back in. But you all, let us be clear again, in Georgia right now, before anything changes, you can fax or email your absentee ballot application. That means we need to do this today. Today. All of you with home businesses, come on, get your neighbors. If they don't have a fax machine, if somebody doesn't have a computer, if you don't, I mean, or a printer, come on. All we have to do, like I said, is, you know, use your gloves, put it in the mailbox, get your gloves on, take it out of the mailbox. This, if this is what we have to do, then this is what we must do. And how we get it done. We want to be the state that actually got it done. And this allows us, let us be clear, no one has ever asked the question, why is it every year you hear cited, oh, there's 600,000 unregistered voters year after year.
After year.
But wait a minute. You got all of these organizations, People's Agenda, New Georgia, Urban League, Georgia One, everybody is doing what? Voter registration. Oh, we did 5,000. Oh, we did 2,000. Oh, we did 20,000. Oh, we did what? 50,000? Why hasn't that number changed? Why? Unregistered voters. No, you registered voters. It's time that we keep our own numbers and we do it this way. This way we'll be able to say, oh, over here in Cobb County off of Lemon Street, hello, we collected because we got new, a whole new subdivision over here since the projects are gone, right? And no, down the street here, we have collected 400 voter registration or absentee ballot. Now, all 400 of those people need to receive either their voter registration card or their absentee ballot. And we had already planned on March 22nd here at Zion to march the vote because we are like a couple of blocks from the Marietta post office, the main post office here downtown. And, well, of course, we couldn't do that, but we did have, like I said, our partners, Sigma Deltas, the Heritage Museum, and others who were here with their laptops, with our laptops, with their tablets, and with their cell phones to help people look up their status. And that's what we have to do. I have garnered other churches in our community, providing them with absentee ballots, providing them with the instructions from Secure the Vote handouts for them. And thankfully to some of our pastors, I have been given like 20 minutes during service to break down this information. They put the My Voter page up on the website, up on the monitor. We walk through the process. And that is where we have to, again, get back to. People are going to the grocery stores. You mentioned that about people being out, but playing with our social distances as allowed, our stores used to be where we got information. Remember posting what's going on? That's where our happenings used to be posted, on the boards there. Well, it's time that we now reach out to them. And, hey, if you're going to be open, then have the applications here. Have them here. Our Cobb County Board of Elections, they have the absentee ballot applications, and they have instructions on the back with the information about faxing and emailing. So, you know, that's what we have to actually make sure of the information that's going to people. I put a packet together for a lady who was here. Her parents are in one of those senior community areas, and I put together the information, the My Voter page, little slip that Cobb County Board of Elections puts out, and it just has the cobbelections.org and My Voter page information. And remember, that's where you get your sample ballot from, which won't be available for, I think, another couple of weeks, I believe. But that information plus voter registration forms and a printout of what My Voter page looks like, with directions. So we can do these little things. Again, I already have them done. So I ask that if anyone wants to help getting this information out, please contact me. I thank my sister Stacy Hopkins. She, if you do not know, has a a free food pantry box. In her community.
Hold on a second. We can let Stacy tell it for herself, and here she is.
Oh, no. I was speaking to you about, I'm talking about absentee.
Stacy just called in.
Stacy did call in. Okay. Okay. Well, I'm just rounding it out to all that we can do. And I didn't know that she was on. So, hello, a segue. Because she's. She's passing She's passing out absentee ballot applications and so on and so forth. Hey, Stacy. Okay.
Hey,
but that's what we have to do. We have to get, as you would say, down and dirty. That's what time it is. But we cannot be distracted. We must keep it moving. The time is now, and I will leave you with Dr. Lowry's quote, that voting is a sacred right and moral obligation. Our dean of the Civil Rights Movement, rest now in peace.
Amen. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Okay.
Now,
but I can be. Okay. Go ahead, Stacy.
Hey, y'all. Can you hear me?
Hey,
Stacy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. First of all, this is. She really did not say all that she does. This is an absentee ballot diva. And stop playing,
yes,
Sharon.
No,
you've been doing this. See, here's the thing about absentee ballot voting by mail. And stop playing, Sharon, trying to be all, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
First of all, we know how to do this because those of us in the grassroots, we have been doing this for at least a decade, right?
That's right.
The Quitman Penn case was absentee by mail, okay?
That's
there have
right.
been races won. Mary Frances Williams won her seat by absentee ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But I need
to
explain to people why this is more important. It's necessary now because of the virus, but there are some other benefits that talk to voter suppression as to why we need to use this. And the Quitman 10 case is a good example. We have a problem breaking the wheel of the whole. You can't get people into office if your suppressors have a lock on the office, right? Now, we have a problem with these voting machines. That has been well documented. There are cases winding through. We still have, and this is one of the stories that has not been talked about, there has been 123,000 voters that mysteriously disappeared from those voting machines, yet to be found. The court is not going to find them. The state ain't going to try and find them. So until we find out through the case being launched by Coalition for Good Governance, we still do not know. Those 123,000 voters could have made the difference between Stacey Abrams being governor and Kemp being governor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So absentee by mail is nothing new. It's not a new tactic. It has its benefits. We have a few states that use vote by mail, and absentee by mail is the same thing as vote by mail, except vote by mail, every registered voter gets the ballot, right? So when you use that, when the states that it has been used, turnout goes up. That's the problem that we've had here. And for me, you know, being, I don't know if everyone has seen the movie Suppressed by Brave New Films. Every year or every election cycle, we see the noble black people who wait for hours to go vote. You know what happens when you use vote by mail? You don't see those lines anymore. You don't have to worry about trying to get someone to the polls. If you need a translator, who are you more apt to trust, a translator who lives in your home or in your community or somebody you don't know? So there's a lot of benefits. You can research and vote in the comfort of your own home. And we will be putting out resources how people can find that so that they are the best informed voter when they sit down and fill it out. Now, this is going to be an interesting experiment because a lot of people, and I myself definitely understand that, particularly black people, we love to go out and vote on election day on the machine. It has a romantic connotation for us because of our history and the importance of the vote, what it means to us on a visceral level. If you believe in that concept, and if you really want your vote to count, this is the best way, because I need for people to understand, Raffensperger is not going to launch this outright because he wants you to use those machines. He spent $30 million more dollars than he needed to be to get them. So do you really, and there's no return. This ain't Macy's. He can't bring them back. He can't get a refund. So he wants this to fail so that you can use those machines and they can continue to run the table in Georgia. Because since Georgia voted Democratic until 2000, what happened in 2000? HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, where we got these electronic machines. And since then, they ran the table and snatched all of the major offices in Georgia. And we're sitting up here like Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football, and every year they keep come on, kick the ball, and they pull it. This is why, because they have a lock on those machines. If we get enough people to use this method to vote, they will not only see the benefit and convenience of it, Election Day will look a little bit different. Instead of, it'll be like Tax Day, okay? Tax Day is the last day to get your tax return in. Election Day will be the last day to get your ballot in. We already have 180 days where you can ask in advance, where you can ask for your application. So there are a lot of benefits, and for particularly for Black people, we should be highly cognizant of the benefits that go toward. I do not want to see one more Black voter sit out there for hours waiting to vote, and then you wait to vote on the voting machine only to be lost in cyberspace. So if you want your vote to count, please listen to them. And before you fill out your application, go to the My Voter page, as Sharon suggested. Make sure you fill it out exactly how you are registered. You know, they're going to look at every single thing. Be careful how you sign the document. You know, we got people who think they are signature analysts down in our local election board. They are going to bring out all the stops to try and disallow any ballot. So it's very important that people know the process. It is a laborious, antiquated process. It is designed to do that because in Georgia, and I was very offended when Raffensperger quoted Dr. King and John Lewis, you know, we're going to do this, you know, in the memory of them. Man, please. This state has done the absolute most in suppressing voters. So to think that all of a sudden they've had some sort of moment of brevity or, you know, some great epiphany, and all of a sudden they want you to vote. Don't let the smooth taste fool you. If you want to see this succeed, we're talking old school precinct organizing. Be a precinct captain on your block. Print out some absentee ballot applications. Take them and make sure people know, when you fill this out, let me know so that we can track them. Because I don't care what these organizations say. I don't care what letter they sign saying they agree with it. I agree on a lot of things. Doesn't mean I'm going to do it. So these groups out here who are acting like, you know, they are looking, oh, this is so hard. They've been doing it. They know how to do it. They already have the network. Are they going to do it? I doubt it. And I don't think we should sit around and wait for anyone to come save us. We're going to have to save ourselves.
Well, we got 90 seconds left in the show.
Thank you.
Is there any closing words?
Let's get it done.
You know, and I appreciate y'all coming on here, because now y'all are giving me the focus of what we, Down South and Dirty, is going to dedicate all of our shows to, the, you know, a portion of our show for till Election Day, to making sure that we remind people that this is what they need to be doing. This is
okay,
be
and rule.
Be, yeah, and particularly
rule.
Yes.
Focus.
So
yes, because rule.
Right. So we also know, I was actually talking to some folks yesterday about this, and I'm going to see if I can get those folks to call, you know, call in next week and talk about how we're going to do this as a rule strategy. But let's get it done. Let's get it done. Let's get it done.
And campaigns can fold this into their GOTV now. You know, you have to
surely can
fold it in there now.
Governor Deal mailed absentee ballot applications to South Georgia seniors for the reelection. Okay? So let's be clear. It works.
Right.
And it's what
it
must be done.
Well, this is Down South and Dirty, y'all. We're gonna get it done. We out. Peace.
Thank you.